And he came to me one day and he asked me, he said, Thomas, do you know why cooks cook? I'm like, okay, I'm trying to think. He said, we cook to nurture people. I know people call me a chef, but our trade is cooking. Mm-hmm. And that to me is such a profound profession because we get to really be part of people's lives in significant ways. So never forget that.
Second counts. Hands service. I've used up all of my culinary references. Welcome back, analysis listeners. Really quick, welcome back to the episode, Vic Kuligowski, you old son of a son.
So happy to be back, Bob. Always a pleasure.
So this is season three for you. Me and you have talked season one and two. You guys should go back and listen to it if you haven't listened to it yet. We made fun of Angel the Dishwasher, a.k.a. Jose Cervantes, a lot there. We don't need to do that today. But Vic's back in, and we're really loading up our service here. We're going to do one and a third turns, as they say,
like that,
in the show.
I
don't,
like
I don't, I'm
I
really, I'm trying my best to hammer in a lot of these. But we have a few extra guests, so we're doing a four top today, because my cousin Paulina and her husband, Adam, two people within the industry, are joining us today. So welcome in, Paulina and Adam.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Yeah, we were talking on the 4th of July. You guys just got a little bit of time off, a little bit of that slice of life that Chef Andrea Terry was celebrating when you guys had the 4th of July holiday. So we were talking and you guys had just started watching The Bear, so three seasons in. But why that's surprising to me is because you both work at a very, very popular Metro Detroit area restaurant named Mabel Gray. So this restaurant is so popular that my favorite Detroit Lions player on a sports podcast said he's been trying to get a reservation at Mabel Gray. So Amon-Ra St. Brown, you
Wait,
served him.
On record, he said that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He said that in a like a ESPN podcast. That he's a foodie in Detroit. He's been trying to get
awesome.
A restaurant.
All right.
And
cool. He made it.
Tell him to call me.
Yeah. So he actually has been served by Adam Franchek, who's on this podcast right now. Adam. So Adam is the Mabel Gray sous chef or CDC. Correct.
That's right. Yeah.
Am I getting
my
terms
right?
You're doing great.
And Paulina is the general manager, plus she runs the wine program. So she's literally been to Champagne, France. She's like a triple black belt level somm. And so you guys know this industry very well. And this is such an industry specific show that I was a little surprised that you guys hadn't started seeing it until season three. So kind of take me through why it took you guys a little bit of time to get there and kind of what was the experience getting in.
So full disclosure, I started watching from the get.
Ooh.
I kept it kind of hush hush because it stresses Paulina out. I knew it would stress Paulina out because of how, I mean, they do a good job of like painting a real life restaurant picture, right? It's fun. It can get stressful. And that's a little too close to home for Paulina, I think.
Yeah, sometimes when you watch a show, you want a little bit of a decompressor or a de-stressor, especially if you work in a high-stress environment. And so
we're stressed all day at work. It's not like she wants to come home and watch stressful television. So,
yeah.
Okay. So it took you a little while, though.
It did. And it was like the first season came out and everyone was like, you gotta watch The Bear. And I'm kind of like obnoxious in the sense that like the more people tell me to watch it, the less it makes me want to watch it. So I like kind of dug my heels in and I was like, no, like, you know, I also did show choir in high school. And so everybody was like, you have to watch Glee. And I was like, I lived Glee. I don't need to watch it. It's going to make me feel really.
Vic is still living Glee. But anyway.
I am. Yeah.
No shade to
said with judgment, but it was. Yeah, but anyway.
So, I was like, I live this, like people would tell me, for example, like the first season episode where Sydney leaves the pre-order on And we're getting all the tickets, and like the physical sound of like the ticket machine whirring is like so specifically triggering to anyone that's ever worked in any sort of like carryout restaurant environment. And I ran the carryout for COVID, so I feel like we were just like so in the weeds as a restaurant in general during COVID, just like trying to survive. So when as soon as I heard about that episode, I was like, oh no, not for me. I can't do this. And then we did get that little slice of life. We had like 10 days off in a row, which absolutely never happens. And I was like, well, I have a break from my day-to-day stress, so I'm just gonna dive in. And honestly, I loved it. I was actually more emotionally affected by the private lives of the characters than I was the work stuff. The work stuff, I was like, oh yeah, this like this all makes sense. And I can handle this. It's the how spot on it is with just like general
maintaining relationships.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really one of the big themes of the season is, and Andrea Terry says it during that funeral service, but she says a lot of times people forget about the food. It ends up being about the people and the connections. And you see the different ways that those are fortunate in positive ways or toxic ways, right? But it's, and that was like a really great way to wrap up the season, I thought. But yeah, it's the kind of the people, the inter-character work, the growth and development of all of these characters within the kitchen that you get to see, that those are, that to me, that's that is where the show really takes off. So I'm glad that you saw that as well. And I did see, because you run a wine program, very fancy wine program, you were drinking wine when we were setting up here, and I was drinking a LaCroix. And so I went and poured myself. Look at this. Oh, I poured myself. So I'm drinking wine today, everybody. So Paulina's got, Paulina, what are you drinking? Because I'm going to do the Michael Scott and sniff my glass and say, this is a red.
This is red. Yes. That is like, from what I can tell, that's like 8 ounces of red. Also,
I poured way too much red. I'm probably going to get the funnel back out and put some back in. It's a lot of red.
It adds to the allure.
And I think I'm drinking it in a white wine glass, but we're going to just.
No, it doesn't matter. I drink out of a solo cup. It's our Sunday ritual.
Sorry for the tangent, but so you were saying you did enjoy it. And so that was going to be one of my things is, because I know Vic is a big fan as well. But this is a show that kind of talks poetically through many different monologues about what food service is and its nourishment of the community. And it's these people that get up on these soapboxes and talk, you know, very weepingly about the importance of this craft. And so I always was wondering, like, I train salespeople. If there was a show about sales trainers that talked about the place we serve in the community, I think I would be kind of into that, right? So it felt like you kind of connected to some of that as well.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, we, full disclosure, also literally just finished this season, like as 20, of like, and
ago.
Like hit yes on the Zoom link, because we were at work very late last night and we were like, you know, we had to cram 6 episodes into like 4 hours. So we did,
oh, wow. Yeah.
We did a show. And so it's all very fresh. And I have to say that the last episode really did like get to me in that,
okay,
like nourishment way. I was like, I feel so grateful to this show because I feel like we do, like, because of the general societal conversation around restaurants due to the Bear, I feel like we have like the, and Vic, correct me if you don't see this happening at your end in Chicago, but like I feel like even just in my own community or like with my friends or my family or like my in-laws or whoever, like you feel like you get a new sense of respect from people because like, oh,
yeah.
I didn't really realize how hard this was or how seriously you took it or how like mentorship matters or how you are like, you know, kind of working on a professional level that I didn't think existed behind the scenes of a restaurant.
The amount of times that I get asked, have you seen the Bear every single day of my life is like, it's insane.
And we're in an open kitchen too at Mabel. So like everybody can see.
People are just shouting that back to you guys while they're eating.
Exactly.
Have you seen it? Yeah. No, check it out.
Yeah. And it's like, Adam has his apron on and he has his quart container full of water and he has his towel. Like they do a great job with the physicality of the job. Like even the boxes, the breaking down of the boxes is so spot on. Frustration of the cardboard is like, so I felt really proud of them, you know, from like a production standpoint of just getting it so getting it so right in the details. And I do feel like that nourishment of the community is so meta and it's so philosophical and existential, like how restaurants function in the community setting. But even just down to like the, you know, the Sharpies and the tape and all that.
Yeah, the green tape.
Yeah,
it's not when washing the green tape off when it comes back to the dish room. Yeah, that's Jose Cervantes. So Vic, what did you think of the season, man? Did you, we've been talking and you had texted me earlier that you said you've heard some reviews were a little sloppy. You were kind of getting through it. You were interested in my takes on it, but what did you think?
Well, can I start at the beginning with the absolute beautiful montage of Carmi's whole backstory of the kitchens that he worked in?
Oh my God.
And the device that was used, and you have to go back, and I'll start there by saying that really set up the whole backstory that you kept asking yourself through the first two seasons. You're just like, what makes Carmi tick? Why is he where he is? Why are his relationships the way that they are? And you also get to see the different characterizations of the chefs that he has worked for from all ends of the spectrum, I feel, right? Like you got Joel McHale's character, who is absolutely verbally abusive towards him.
Yeah.
And then, correct me if I'm wrong, it's like Daniel Balut is like just like so sweet and taking the time. And he's like, we're listening to this, right? He's like, it's singing to you, right? So you kind of get this very sweet, tender, nourishing thing, as you were talking about. So I just thought it started with a really cool device that really there was like not even any dialogue. We were literally just watching Carmi live, which I thought was a really cool way from a series that I feel like kind of pounds you over the head so hard through those first two seasons. And you have so many questions, and I feel like it was like slowly answering them for you without telling you. It was showing. And I'm going to go back to Spencer Davis, a director that we have worked with, and his thing was always like, show me, don't tell me, show me.
Yeah.
And I think that first episode really did a great tone of showing you all these kind of visceral things that were going on, as you do know in the kitchen, but like it's kind of building it up. And I just thought that was a really cool way to start. I will start there because I do have other thoughts on the season that I did think fell flat to me as a viewer, that I'm just like,
You can say it now. What were some of the things you thought were areas of opportunity? Because I have a couple as well.
Yeah, I have a couple areas of opportunity that I thought I was writing headlines on my thing. Like if I had to start a review, it'd be like The Bear, too self-indulgent. Or, you know what I mean? Like, that's a nice double entendre.
Waiting
like,
on a review is one of the main keys of this, especially a Tribune. How many times have me and you been waiting on a freaking Tribune review to try to make or break a show, right?
I'm telling you, exactly. It's like 2.5 stars and 4.5 or 4 stars is a huge gap, right? In a review or something like that. And I'm going to go right in the middle on this season, because it was like, you got some of those answers and there were some really cool like episodes and devices that they were using. But then sometimes I thought they kind of stayed on some of these topics way too long. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm thinking about, like, I love the Jamie Lee Curtis and Sugar episode, but I'm like, I already know that Jamie Lee doesn't have a good relationship with Sugar and Carmi. And I'm like, I don't need 30 minutes of this happening right now. And can Carmi and Richie just squash the beef? And do I really want to know what's going on with Claire? So I guess I'm left with just as many questions as answers. I don't want to sound too tangent-y.
If you think about the lift in terms of where we're going with The Bear and everything, we really didn't move a lot this season. We went deeper in terms of some of the character stuff, but we haven't really moved a lot in terms of the direction of that. One of my little gripes was I really enjoyed and found it very emotional, the scene with Jamie Lee Curtis and Sugar and the baby. At the end, I thought they had just a great visual of her kind of staggering down the hallway. And then they bring back the facts. I thought my biggest thing was that the facts were way too overused. I thought the haunts did not play at all. I said, you guys think this bit's way funnier than what it actually is. And the facts come and they console, or they're just kind of like, oh, you're a grandma now. And we have this like little 2-minute you're a grandma now scene in the lobby of the hospital. And I was watching with Brecken, who, like Adam and Paulina, she just started this year, and she binged a lot of these recently. And she was like, that seemed weird. And I was like, yeah, I think what they wanted to do was, if they would have just had her walking out because of the nature of suicide in the family, the nature of her unpredictability and chaotic nature. I think they wanted to make the audience know that like everyone's okay. And so they, it almost felt like they tagged that at the end after some pre-screenings, but it felt out of place, at least to me. Anyway, that was a moment.
No, and I'm just going to add one more thing and then we can continue. But I was thinking the addition of the facts, because that was actually on my list too much fact. And I'm thinking they're doing that because I think they were trying to prove that The Bear is a comedy. Because, you know, I think when you're going about like nominations and stuff, oh, is it a drama? Is it a comedy? I feel like they were really doubling down on the facts, like adding that comedic element to it, as well as Maddie Matheson being a producer. He was just like, now that we know what like the formula is, he's like, I think it just felt a little like he wanted to just, I don't know, say the good lines more. I don't know. Like, that's just what it felt like to me.
But like with any dish, sometimes less is more. You can put too much spice in the dish, right?
Well, what do they say about Italian cooking? The best ingredient is the one that you leave out. So
simplify, right? Carmi is always talking about, I simplified. We're not simplifying when it comes to the facts. That's for sure.
Mm-mm. No, absolutely not. So
I definitely agree with Vic. The last episode in particular kind of like hit home with me. And I think it's the full circle, like showcasing every step of Carmi's career to get him to like where he was, you know, being verbally assaulted by whatever, Joel McHale. Mm-hmm. It's so important, I feel, to like show that side of chefdom. It's like cooking is not about just like putting cool ingredients on a plate. It's like shucking a trillion peas and like sipping a million flowers and like brunoising 100 billion onions. It's like so many years of practice just to get to this specific like moment or point in your career, which I think is really important to like for normal people to see about the industry.
I do think this season was very heavy-handed in a lot of ways, with Carmi's trauma, with the generational familial trauma, and the stress of sugar bringing a life into the world in this like chaotic environment. And then there's also the generational trauma that they're kind of all working out, the chefs amongst the table as they're eating at the funeral service at Ever. You know, it's like Jenny Kwan and Anna Posey and all these like big Chicago.
Miley Dufresne.
Yeah, Christina Tosi. Yeah, they really like, they dropped in. They like sent out a mass email to every James Beard nominee like chef that was in the Midwest at the time. And they were like, come on down. Even like when Ibra's working on the sandwich window, they bring in Uncle Polly from Uncle Polly's Deli. He has like a million delis in LA, and I think he just opened some in Vegas. So like they're obviously like calling their friends and being like, hey, come in for this one episode. And that's, it's heavy-handed to me, and it's certainly like Ever is an existing restaurant in Chicago that is, to my understanding, not closing, and it's Curtis Duffy's restaurant. I'm not sure how he I don't understand. I'm sure that there's some sort of confusion in the general public about like why would Ever like even want to project the possibility that they might be closing. And Olivia Coleman is obviously not the chef at Ever, and Ever's a real restaurant, even though it's supposed to be an amalgamation of Alinea and 11 Madison Park in one. It's just very like a little dissonant in that way, and obvious when they're bringing everybody together. But I do think that the general gist that they're trying to get across is like all of these people have had embarrassing services and tough first dishes and have worked awful bosses. And both Sydney and Carmi need to hear that from other professionals because they're so in their own bubble about The Bear and the reviews and their own shit. That once they hear it from other professionals that are like in their view far beyond where they are and what they've been through, that's a very educational moment, I think, for all of them. But I would say the other ways, agreed with Vic, that the season is heavy-handed is like the facts. And the haunts felt really like heavy-handed to me, even just calling them haunts, because Carmi is clearly like haunted by Claire. And there are all of these. I'm like, okay, this is like a little too on the nose for you to be bringing this up all the time when clearly every single character is haunted by their own trauma. And I thought that there were just way more interesting themes to explore, like masculinity and vulnerability, which like I'd love to expound upon later. But there are just so many other things to be discussed outside of like the same
thing. Tell me about the masculinity thing, because I'd be interested to hear that. That's not something I necessarily clocked.
Yeah, I mean, I think that gender plays a huge role in restaurants in general. And I think that Carmi is this like uber masculine figure that can kind of be put in any situation. And he's like super muscular and like stoic. And his most charming moments are the moments where you see him like smirk and like laugh. Like you see him in the Noma Gardens, they'll cut to him, you know, looking at flowers, or like, you know, you see him in moments of joy, and that's when you're most endeared to him. And he doesn't show those moments very often. He certainly doesn't show them at the restaurant. And he uses that as like, I have to be this way in order to be.
Well, it's what was patterned for him by the David Fields character, right?
Right, right. And then there's, you know, moments where Sydney, I think she's kind of intentionally like desexualized in her costuming, because like Ioa Tabiri is such a like stunningly beautiful woman, but they kind of, in order for Carmi to be seen as like an equal, first of all, they're never standing next to each other because I think he's too short, and so they always have to be across from each other, otherwise it's like too obvious that he's like teeny tiny.
That's Tom Cruise syndrome.
Yeah for sure. But I think that she does a really great job kind of not being vulnerable and emotional in this like stereotypically female way. And I think that she had to learn to do that in order to become successful in the industry. And so her kind of squaring off with Carmi and being like, you're being crazy, you know, but I have to be subordinate to you. It's just, I found that very interesting. And then Claire is kind of like quintessentially female, because she's got this like manic pixie dream girl thing going on. She's like strong enough to be an ER nurse, but and obviously like so beautiful, and then also very emotionally available
immediately.
Yeah,
she's the piece.
She's the piece, and she's very very comfortable with who she is, and it's clear that Carmi is not. And obviously Mikey and Richie have this kind of toxic masculinity thing, yelling. And I find that just, you know, the classic gender tropes are definitely at play here. And I wish that we could
have a discussion on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And I wish we could see Sydney in like a more expressly romantic situation outside of just like the subtlety of her interaction with Marcus. And obviously it's like really difficult to be in relationships when you're in the industry. That's, you know, but Adam and I are married to each other because we spend all day, you know, together.
It's very natural.
Lucky enough to like find that. But, you know, I do think that there was could have been some really interesting work to be done. Even Pete, Sugar's husband, is like so emotionally available and so vulnerable. Shit on the entire time.
But I think that's also interesting, is you've got this crazy family that's so up and down emotionally, and they can love so hard but also hate so hard, and then you've got just this like relentlessly optimistic guy that just everyone just is like, fuck you, you know. But but you even see and it was in Mulaney's monologue in season two where he says, you know, bears can be territorial and fierce, but they could also be very sweet, kind, and loving. And I love, my favorite episode is the Tina episode where she's trying to find work, and she starts crying with the napkins. And I love the callback, that the specificity of some of the stuff they're able to do when she like gets the napkin thing later and she's helping with the window in season three. But anyway, but you see that it's such a beautiful scene where they're able to just sit down and be vulnerable with a complete stranger. And, you know, Michael is there, and we know what happens to Michael later, but he's just this like really kind, empathetic man. And, you know, so you can see some of that as well, but you also see the toxic side of the masculinity in the kitchen as well. Right.
The Tina episode was my favorite as well. I think because I missed the beef.
Okay.
Like, missed, like, of all of the things that could be haunting the show, like, I missed the beef. And I think that that was intentional. Like, she walks in the door and you see Richie, like, screaming and yelling, and you see a line out the door.
Nothing makes sense.
And nothing makes sense. It's chaos, and the facts are where they belong, which is, like, playing on the pinball machines. And Richie is this, like, pillar of, you know, empathy. And
he's like, everything's falling apart, everything sucks, but this is all I got.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, there's some days where it's amazing and we leave with a couple hundred bucks of tips in our pocket, and people were important to people. And yeah, I think it's like,
yeah,
thank you.
That's also just kind of throwing it back when you said about, like, the tips is just it was really interesting seeing, like, Michael kind of being there and in his element, and like you said, Bob, the pillar that he was, like, for as chaotic as everyone else is, I would say that, like, I feel like he kind of, like, held that place together, which then actually then pays off to why. I mean, obviously we know what happened, but I feel like it makes it even more painful and more real because he held that shit down. He seemed like the one that got it. It felt like no one else gets it, but he gets it. Like, no one else was going to be able to talk to Tina in that moment except him. And how she was, like you said, drawn in by this kind of hectic environments, and the idea that the hospitality industry is able to offer you or anyone a job if you are willing and able. You know what I mean? Because, like, it just goes to show, it's like, for as much as, like, as, like, kind of a job shortage that we have these days, I feel like everyone is so picky, and it's like, it seems impossible. And then you go into a restaurant and you're like, wow, if you really want to do it, you can find your purpose, which is another season 2 throwback right there with Richie. And I feel like that was her purpose episode. That was her finding, like, what she wanted or needed. And then the other favorite part, too, if we're talking about masculinity and talking about your haunts, because I believe Carmi was the only one who confronted his haunt when he was able to go to his chef at the funeral and talk about that, because I think that was something that I just really wanted to bring up, because it was this whole kind of power thing of, like, you made me the way I am, and you make me have nightmares, you make me have, like, ulcers, right, and all this stuff. And it was this huge power trip, and he's like, but you're good, right? He's like, you're here welcome because of welcome me.
Yeah,
you're welcome. And
he Don Drapered him.
He's like,
I don't think about you at all.
Yeah, I don't think about you at all. Line. And just to watch him go to the bathroom and just, like, for him to take a piss or shit after seeing him or whatever is just, and watching Carmi break down in that moment was honestly, I'd say napkins and that were some of the most powerful parts of the season where I go, holy shit, like, this is it. And then I'm kind of brought back down by going, to be continued. No, what are you talking about? Because to me, I'm wondering this. Is season 3 a bridge season? Like, because I'm only saying that because I'm like, 1 and 2 came out so hot. I guess I'm just wondering if season 4's payoff is going to be so, so strong that we're like, I can forgive you for some of these things that I thought maybe could have been touched on a little bit more or a little bit less. Like, is season 3 simply a bridge to get us to season 4? And my mind is going to be blown, and it's like, just, it will prove to me why it's still the best show on television.
Yeah, the scene with Joel McHale when he just has a full-on meltdown when he says, I don't think about you at all, walks away. Oh, God. Yeah, I definitely get it. You know, at least in the cooking industry, everyone has a peer that, you know, drives them absolutely insane, but also pushes them to be the chef or the cook that they are, for better or for worse, you know. But I definitely related to that big time.
Yeah, I think that there are, you know, moments in this season where Carmi has opportunities to face past traumas. You know, like, he's obviously avoiding Claire and he's obviously avoiding his mom. And, like, it's implied that he has not met his sister's daughter that she just like didn't answer the phone call, like, is just, like, strangely absent. And it feels like the Joel McHale character has been holding him back from all of these things. So it's like, okay, maybe acknowledging this fear is what's going to set him free in season 4 to, like, start to, you know, live out the truth that Andrea Terry tells him, which is like, you're invincible. You know, you've been through the shit, right? You've been through like the worst verbal abusive situation, and it has made you who you are. You just need to embrace it, let it go, and move on. And I do think that there's something really poignant about the chef being able to tell him like, you're excellent. And you can see on Carmi's face, like,
he gets it.
He finally gets it. It doesn't take a review and it doesn't take admiration from the general public. Had he just believed that he was good and seen that experience as worthwhile this whole time, he could have saved a lot of heartache by just saying like, that guy was an asshole, but guess what? Like, look at where I am now. I've progressed. But also, like,
it's so hard to believe that, though, you know?
In the moment.
As someone been just, like, beat to a fucking pulp, you know?
Yeah.
It's very difficult to be, like, think, like, oh, yeah, I am better because of it.
Yeah, I'm great. This feels good. Like, I've made it. It's, you hold so much resentment, and hopefully it's released. But I did feel a bit fatigued on harping on that a little bit. So I was glad for the confrontation, because I'm hoping that they can just like be done with that arc. Not because I don't think it's important, but because I think that there's just like bigger fish to fry, you know? And
no pun intended. Go ahead, Vic. You had a thought. Man.
No. I love that. I love that fact, because maybe like that is why I feel a certain way. I'm not saying that I didn't like season three. I'm just saying it's like, I felt like maybe they harped on things too long, where it's like, it is time to move it along a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now it's crunch time, right? It's like, are we getting the star? Are the reviews going to be good? I guess I keep going back to, I need some answers now as a viewer. Even I'm even talking about outside of the industry. I'm just going, I need some answers. Yeah. I need some answers, which is, I think, a cool device that they did use. Cause now I'm going, yeah, I just keep going back to that thought. That's all I wanted to add.
I think the Joel McHale scene, to me, I talk about this a lot in different movies. It was very Whiplash to me, where it's, what does it take to be break? What does it take to make a breakthrough? And good, positive, warm vibes. Like, you're not going to get what you need to actually make breakthroughs. And so the whole you're welcome piece I thought was really interesting, where it's like, yeah, hey, you came in an average chef and now you learned leadership. You learned how to do this better. You're a good chef. You're great now. Uh-huh. You came in average and now you're great. Like, what you got better and now you're gone. Like, what's your issue, dude? It is very toxic. And you're looking at, and I think that's why the scene is so cool with all the famous chefs that you guys labeled that I don't know who they are. And then they're talking about the different experiences of what's it like to have good leadership and positivity and be able to put your fingerprints on something. But then they're also talking about what it's like to tell when someone tells you that it is ready. And then you see the flashbacks of Sid thinking back to Carmen saying, it's not ready yet. It's not ready yet. But he's also improving her in those moments, right? And so it's like, it is a balance. And obviously, I think they're going to Carmi leaving the Joel McHale type of leadership experience and moving into the Andrea Terry type of leadership experience. I think that's part of the journey, is him being able to, exactly to Paulina's point, have peace with it. He's confronted it. And now I can start to move forward after it. And I think one thing I found in just some half-assed research is that David Field's character was actually Joel McHale, based it on Thomas Keller, who in a weird way is giving that really nice speech at the top with the wishbones. And the actual man is giving a lot of these kind of like warm and fuzzies with it. So it's kind of interesting that apparently that guy runs a pretty toxic and stressful kitchen work environment.
That is so interesting. I would have thought for sure, and this is like us just like geeking out, but I would have thought for sure that the Joel McHale character was based off of Charlie Trotter. Curtis Duffy is the chef of
Everett. It might be a little bit of a, but yeah. Thomas Keller's in there, they said.
Yeah, for sure. No, and Thomas Keller, actually, Adam was like so geeked out when he was on the screen, because it's like we have all of the French Laundry cookbooks and he does seem so warm and fuzzy. Apparently it is a thing that every morning he walks in and like fist bumps every single cook in his kitchen, which he does at the time.
Oh, okay.
Which is really cute. But like, there are so many mentors in the restaurant industry in general, in any sort of professional environment. And I think that being faced with the question of what type of leader you want to be is really challenging and very interesting. And I think that, like, getting to it in the last episode, it was almost like too little too late. Like, I'm like, I think that it's difficult. We talked about this a little bit over 4th of July. I think it's difficult to manage people while managing stress, while managing yourself, while not having a break, while wanting greatness and having no control over how these people make mistakes or behave, or, you know, the reviewers coming in and you're trusting that all of your cooks are just going to perform. And then you don't have a lot of time to philosophically sit back and think about leadership books or take a class from Zingerman's about how to, you know, have internal hospitality. You know, it's like there's just no time. There's no structure for that. And so acknowledging that in the industry, I think, is really important. And even outside of the industry, because I think a lot of people are in managerial roles in their life when they don't even really consider how they're affecting the lives of their employees. And I mean, Bob, for you, you are in a leadership position and you're constantly incentivizing your employees and coworkers to be better. Yeah. And that is such a skill. And it's not really something that anyone is equipped with in the industry. So when you see someone like Thomas Keller giving an inspirational speech, or like Andrea Terry, it feels very fictionalized. Cause you're can't imagine.
I'm like, it's not fucking real.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Nobody in the kitchen has the time to be like, oh, this is actually similar to when you're at the dentist. No. Butchering a chicken is not anything like that.
Yeah. Right.
But that's so funny.
But it is, you know, it's important to acknowledge that maybe the industry would be better if we did have that sort of leadership. And Carmi has a lot of unlearning to do. And like, Mikey was a really great leader. Like, that's what's so interesting about it, is that, you know, Mikey, for all of his faults and for putting all the money in the tomato cans and stuff, like, he clearly understood people, and Carmi lacked.
But I think it's interesting that you, as you're talking, I just came to this thought. So it's not well thought out, but it's, we're talking a lot about what's patterned in front of us. Then if we don't have time to sit down and listen to a leadership podcast or read a book or take a seminar, you have to go with what was given to you, very similarly to how you're raised in generational trauma. And like, a lot of these pattern behaviors come from something I've seen in front of me. And then some of them are good, and then some of them are problematic, and you need to be able to work through the things that are problematic for self-improvement. And so I think that it could potentially be working on it in a couple different angles with all of these people, and finding peace is something that's very common. You've got Marcus trying to find peace with his mother. You've got Tina finding peace with her career. You've got, obviously, Carmi in all of his different ways finding peace. You have Sid, who's trying to work through panic attacks now. They're regularly happening a lot more because of this situation, but having her peace and figuring out where she's going to go. And so I think a lot of people are searching for peace. And I think it's just kind of working through some of the things that were patterned in front of you. Sounds like something that could potentially be a theme that I had missed.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think that the vulnerability element, I think everyone in the show that can tap into any element of vulnerability is rewarded, right? Like, Tina putting herself out there, stomping the pavement to get a job as a 46-year-old woman, and then having that vulnerable sobbing over a sandwich, Mikey showing vulnerability, Sugar showing vulnerability, Jamie Lee. It's really Carmi. Like, Carmi's the only person that, like,
is not.
He's not moving forward.
The only time he showed it was with Joel McHale.
Right. Yeah, truly. And he, like, you know, didn't get much back because Joel McHale isn't going to be vulnerable with him. So that is a broader theme of just openness. Mm.
I see you when you were talking about masculinity. I thought about the scene with Jimmy and Carmi. He's just spraying shit. And it's the two of them are having basically, they have to have like a conversation outside of a conversation. Like they can't tell each other, hey, I'm scared, or hey, I'm worried, or here are some of my things. They have to talk about like golf clubs and like dude talk, right? And it's just like, but it essentially, and then he gets back to the car and the computer is like, did you tell him that you're out of cash and that we're going to probably have to shut it down? And he's like, you don't understand. And it's like, it's these guys not being able to express themselves and like have honest conversation, or at least emotional conversations.
Right. Yeah. And Marcus is, you know, his situation with his mom and his openness is just an example. He's like the Jesus figure. I feel like he's just so good and so pure, even when computer like suggests cutting him because he only makes two dishes, and Sugar's like, don't fuck with Marcus. Like,
that's
Marcus
a great scene.
Yeah, is like great. Our person, like you can't feed him. And those are the moments too where you're like, oh, you know, you don't have to be so thick-skinned in the world. Like you can move softly through a tough industry and still be successful. And I think that the Carmi plotline is kind of implying the opposite. And so it's cool to see them play with that vulnerability element as well, too. Yeah. Just, hey, if you just soften, open yourself up a little bit, you can actually get farther.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
I hope I'm not jumping the gun here, but I'm thinking some of like, okay, the cool co-stars. I'm just thinking about, I'm just thinking about Richie's situation and like how he has to be there for, or how he is going to be there for his wife in the wedding. And that's what I'm thinking about season four too, is that like, I'm thinking about like the idea of Richie having to put his kind of feelings aside for his daughter. And I don't know why I kept going back to that, because I'm just thinking about that vulnerability of like doing something you have to do instead of wanting to do, right? And it's like he's putting everything aside, and we're not going to see that full Richie vulnerability yet, because I think we are going to get that in the next season. But that was something that, just from your conversation of about like, that's really putting all your feelings aside and just kind of making sure like that his family is taken care of, because I can't even imagine, right? Because it's like they kept bringing it up to him. Hey, here's the invitation. Are you going to come? Are you going to accept? Are you coming to the wedding and all this stuff? And
unaccepted invitations, a big theme in this season.
I love that, Bob. That's exactly what it is. It's the unaccepted invitations of expectations. And also the fact that Josh Hartnett makes a guest appearance. I'm a total 90s kid and early 2000s. Like Pearl Harbor was my shit back in the day.
That's
sad. And seeing him come back, I know. And seeing him come up on the screen, I was just like, this is insane. Because I'm like, the Bear does a really good job at getting a lot of people that want to be on that show. And they really kind of write to their strengths. You know what I mean? Like anytime I see anyone that I like on there, I'm just thinking, yeah, no, they know what to do with that person. And those are just some thoughts that were in my head.
Yeah. Too. Richie has to accept that invitation. Sid won't click the button. Even talk about people like, what kind of an asshole cancels a reservation? We just lost $2,000. Like they're talking about people that make commitment, or like will or won't make commitments to things. You know,
yes.
The Josh Hartnett character is also an incredibly vulnerable character. Like that one conversation that he has with Richie, where he's like, I'm really nervous, man. Like, I just want to like be real with you. And Richie's like, I hate this.
Yeah.
So much. Please don't do this to me. And so, of course, Tiffany ended up with this like sweet, like emotionally intelligent human. Like Richie is just like this chaos, like hurricane. And clearly Frank is just this like safe cushion to land. Mm-hmm. And Frank is rewarded, you know, he gets like the gold of the kid and the wife, and Richie's like, fuck, that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I think to kind of take us in before we start hypothesizing about what that review said and maybe where we're going in season four, a couple of little moments that were my favorite. The first one was they do a really cool job with the montage, and Carmi makes a plate and he sends a picture to his brother. And then you see his brother sharing the photo out of context with Tina. And then you get to see it again in napkins. Gave me goosebumps. I really love that little moment. Cause it's like, oh, cool. He's like sharing this in this person, in this, this person's rock bottom. Like, it makes it even more special.
I think the whole time, and we found this out later in the season, like the whole time Carmi was away, he was just like looking for gratification from his brother. And, you know, him sending that picture to his brother, I don't think Carmi knew that his brother was like, look at this guy, I'm fucking proud of him. You know,
I didn't think about that. Yeah, that's a good point. Because he puts his life on hold, right? Yeah. And Mikhail's like, that's why you came to me, is you wanted to put your life on hold. You didn't want to think about your life outside of here. But in the little moments where he tried, he didn't get reciprocated. That's a really good call out. I think the other thing that I really liked, it was just kind of a cool shot every now and again. They use color really well in this show, but they had the stark white of the kitchen and then kind of the divider of the wall and then the kind of blue hue of, and it was like Richie and kind of back to back, Richie and Carmi, front of house, back of house. It was just a really cool image. Like if you took it and put it in a picture frame, it would be something that would make you think.
I did love that split screen moment of like front of house, back of house. The tension is very clear in that. Mm-hmm. And then also the fish tank, I feel like comes out in another like fever dream that Carmi's having, which I feel like they were getting a little confusing in this season, where I was like, is this happening or is this a flashback? Like, what's going on? Like, his fixations show up in these like flashes.
Mm-hmm.
He, like, there's a scene where the entire kitchen is like flooded with suds and water. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I wonder if that's a callback to the fish tank exploding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, able to stand by the water when they're like having existential moments. Like, water is clearly this like
water breaking,
grounding. Yeah, and then the water breaking and the labor, like they're leaning into that for sure.
What do you guys think the review was? So you get some flashes at the end. Carmi reads it. It's got a bunch of messages coming through. He says motherfucker, but not in a way that really tips a hand whether it's good or bad. What do you guys think?
My first initial thought, and it was really cool how they did semi-reveal it in a way, because I'm thinking, I don't know, my first initial thought was it's a mixed review, so I think more on the negative side of things for whatever reason. I don't know,
there's more genius in there.
Yeah, well, exactly. So it's like, oh, this genius, but it's like, he is a genius, but, and I think there's a but in there, right? Because like, because of his reaction and because of how things were going leading up into that point, like you said, with Cicero, and you're talking about like, you're just managing the money in a certain way. And it seemed like Carmi was so hyper-focused that he wasn't focusing on anyone else. I wonder in some way that was a detriment to the restaurant.
Some of the words that flash across the screen: confusing, excellent, culinary, dissonance, innovative, brilliant, sloppy, inconsistent, delicious, simple, complex, disappointed, burzado, subtract, overdone, incredible, tired, stale, talent.
So
what a word soup there.
And I'm gonna go on the idea of kind of what you were saying too about like, what's real, what's not? Is this his perception of what these reviews are saying?
Yeah.
Right? Like, are these the perception? Or it's like, what words are his? What words are his? What words are the things in the article? Because you can, what you see and what you hear are two different things. So we're just seeing or this right now. I'm mm-hmm. not quite sure what's real. And that's what gives me the idea of that it could be mixed. But they are so far apart that I'm not quite sure what's real. So I'm going to say just because of his reaction, it is on more maybe the negative side.
Yeah, because he says motherfucker, and it's got a little bit of a bite to it. Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think?
He's getting 2 out of 4 stars.
Ooh.
We're bringing numbers into it.
I like the number game, though. No, that's awesome.
We do stars here on the analysis, but we call them boners. Talking about toxic masculinity.
So we do a four scale
as well, but it's out of boners. But it has nothing to do with like actual eroticism. We just replace it's stars with boners. Anyway, I digress. So you think 2 boners out of 4. Okay, what do you think, Paulina?
So I felt like for the entire season we were getting flashes of reviews.
Yes, we were.
Mostly positive.
But different stuff.
Mm-hmm. They were headlines and like, I don't think those were real.
Okay.
I think that the ones were real, and I think that the negative ones were in Carmi's head. because every interaction that he had outside of the restaurant, that anybody had outside of the restaurant, was like, your restaurant's incredible. We had such a nice time. This was special. Adam Shapiro's poaching your CDC. Yeah. Like, I think that the negative stuff is all in Carmi's head and that it is going to be positive. Mostly I'm going to say that because if it's mixed and or negative, then Unk is going to cut off the funding and then we are out a television show.
Yeah. So
it can't really be negative, because if it's negative, they lose their funding and then it closes and then it's over.
I think that you're almost correct. I think that
okay, yeah.
He's like 2.5 boners.
2.5 boners.
I think the review is gonna give Unk just enough hope to hold on so Carmi can like prove himself. I think that like constantly changing the menu and exhausting your staff leads to like sloppy service, which leads to a mediocre review. But it's very promising.
Oh, like if they're gonna
say
that
they can. You know,
it presents a challenge, like a new, the finish line is always moving, as
in. Yeah.
Oh, which, good.
I was just gonna interject and say yes, because I'm now also thinking about the moment where Fak goes out with the consomme and doesn't do anything with it.
I love
he just
that.
Goes to the table amazing. And doesn't pour it. It's just like,
he pours it and then
and just the look, because you know how it goes, it's like you see a dish come back to the past and you're and the chef's just like, what the hell is going on, right? It's like the biggest deal in the world because it's hot food just dying next to you and you're just like, I told you to go there.
And that could have been a reviewer, for all we know.
Yeah, that's
I was just going to say that too. I go, that could have been a reviewer too. And it's like, yes, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world because they probably just sent them back after and they poured it for them, but it is, could be a hiccup in what they were going for. So yeah.
They're not nailing it. We know they're not.
Yes.
But I don't know. If they get a negative, see, I think maybe this is just me selfishly like projecting, is that I don't want them to get a negative review because I think then I will be officially exhausted of the constant like, oh, like we're always the underdog and we're always coming back and like something's always broken and like we're always like pushing. You know, like then it kind of, we're gonna get into like weeds territory where it's like, oh, she didn't get caught again, and then she didn't get caught again, and then like it's season 8, and like it, we're waiting on a review, and is it gonna be good? And is it gonna be bad? Like I want to move past it, and so I hope that it's good, so we can just like move on to other things.
To play advocate, if it is a stunning review, the new set of challenges is like maintaining that stunning review.
Yeah. Because then if Sid jumps, then how do we keep the boat back? I actually think it's, I was team Paulina before I started this podcast with, it's going to be a good review, but then Sid's going to jump and that's going to be the main conflict. I actually think Adam, I'm over on team Adam now, where it's, if it's a mixed review, 2.5 boners. If it's a mixed review, it's actually, it muddies the waters, but it gives them something to work on, which a lot of what we've set up in season 3, they can start to make those changes to then stick the landing for a review in season 4 that gets them their star. And that's where we say goodbye. I think that actually is more compelling. So I'm sorry, Paulina, I do have to take my boners over to Adam's side of the table.
That's
that.
Okay. I accept. Do you think Sid's going to jump?
Yeah, I think she'll jump, but inevitably come back. I think my main thing is, I love that they talked about, like, it's not about the food, it's about the people, and then they're making, like, crappy waffles and burnt pizza in the party.
Yeah.
And keg beer instead of, like, you know, Paulina's fancy wine. And so, I think when she's looking at that first review of the bear or whatever, and she, when she's looking at it, she keeps seeing all the people. She's seeing Tina, she's seeing Marcus, she's seeing everybody. And I think she'll jump, but realize that she still has growth to do. There's still great people to be able to do it with. And I think she'll inevitably come back and be part of what gets that star. I think that's where I'm going with Sid. But she can't have panic attacks like she's having right now. And I think she'll initially jump because of the panic attacks and the work environment.
She's like the type of personality too. Like as a cook, I think they say it early on, like, I can't remember if it was one of her like previous chefs or someone mentioned that Sydney is like full of ideas, but like needs to reel it in.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like Adam Shapiro is like, here's more money, more benefits. The space is yours. Do whatever you want. It's very compelling to Sydney, but she needs someone like Carmi to be like, it's not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with too much freedom, she opened a catering company and then like flopped, you know.
Yeah.
So it's all about, are you ready to handle being, are you ready to handle being the Carmi when you can see what it's doing to Carmi? Like, mm-hmm. And she is such a great leader. Like when she comes into the beef, she like whips them into shape so quickly.
Totally.
But also I think they intentionally make Adam Shapiro like kind of like a dweeb.
Yeah.
Like they're like,
Carmi's, yeah, I call him, he's kind of reminds me of this guy I know named Vic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Carmi's this like sexy, like, you know, guy.
Yeah, he's the Bob. Yeah.
Yeah, he's mm-hmm. the Bob.
Yeah, he is the Bob.
And Shapiro's the Vic.
And then Shapiro is just this like dweeby, like curly headed, like old nerd. And she's like, maybe I should just go with this very safe option, instead of sticking with Carmi and like working through the shit. But also, I think we all want to see Sydney thrive. And I think we know that she's not seeing her full potential with Carmi.
No, she's standing in the dumpster breaking down boxes.
Yeah. Which
that's,
is like,
that's her life.
And she's like, where are the facts? The facts should be doing this. This is not. And we agree, because the facts have been seen too much.
Too much. They should just be in the dumpster, the dumpster, and then one little soup bit, and then that'll be enough facts.
Yeah, I was just gonna add one more thought to the Shapiro character when he ate at the restaurant and said some sort of comment to her on the first run in that this didn't taste like a Carmi dish, which then I think could make her jump a little bit more, because when I heard him say that, I was like, oh, that means what you had was better than what Carmi was making.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was just a thought.
But I think that also showcases that Carmi needs Sid to improve as well, because he's like, oh yeah, Carmi's got kind of this vibe, and the collaboration between them together is that magic. And that's what they're talking about. The magic of it and the spontaneity of it is showcased at the top of the final episode of the season, right? And they're talking about film and magic and spontaneity and things like that. So I think the two of them collaborating is what's making that magic, and the people.
I was going to say, it's like the Lennon-McCartney thing. It's not going to work one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you kind of need them both in that kitchen in order to succeed at the highest level that they're expecting to, or that they want to be at.
That's exactly, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just going to say, each one of them restrains the other. You know, Carmi holds Sydney down and Sydney holds Carmi down.
Yeah.
It's a mutually beneficial relationship. And I think Carmi would just like
go wild. He'd be off the rails.
Off the rails. Yeah. So I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah, well, me as well.
My question for Vic and Bobby being, Adam and I are very validated in seeing, and I'm sure Vic feels this way as well, seeing the industry portrayed in such like a dignified way in a popular series. And they talk about in the last episode, like there's dignity, there's grace and nobility in service as like a position, like taking care of people is not shameful.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of touches on that as well. Like, I'll wash floors, I'll wash dishes, I don't care. Like, I'm an honest worker.
I just want to take care of myself.
Yeah. And there is so much dignity in that, which I think is a beautiful thing to recognize in 2024, like in the age of like tech bros, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
But if I were the two of you, I would also feel incredibly endeared to this series because it's like a love letter to Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
You love it.
I do, because I want to just bounce off the fact that, yeah, there is some sort of humility to getting on your knees and scrubbing a floor and like having that kind of sense of pride that you have, because like no other, it just, like you said, it's very honest in that way. And I think it's a total love letter to Chicago, because interior, I'm just getting kind of like nerdy here, interior, exterior shots are here. they're here, as opposed to I'm watching, I'm gonna ask Bob for permission to do this, if I can be on the Presumed Innocent podcast too, mm-hmm. where that takes place in Chicago and not a lick of it is shot here. And there's a lick of love language in that show to this city that takes so much pride in itself, right? The city of big shoulders, right? Like this is it. This is the working person's town. So, and I just think it showcases it in the best. I think it showcases it in the best ways here. And those are my kind of thoughts.
Vic, I'll get back to you on Presumed Innocent. I think you still have some growth to do, and I'm gonna scream at you. Joe McHale style in terms of some of what you need to clean up. But no, I of course you can come on Presumed Innocent. I love the love letter. Watching it with Brecken, this is the first season I've been able to watch with my wife, and she lived right around where kind of the beef exterior shots were. She's been to a lot of these restaurants. She gets so excited to see it, and that's special in its own way. But even that last party, Sid's apartment, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I lived in that apartment. Like the wood paneling, literally the refrigerator door, like the hallway. Like I was like, I know this. I can smell this scene. You know, it's like sometimes if you see like a video of someone on Pirates of the Caribbean in Disney World, you're like, I know what that smells like. This video has a smell. It's like that apartment has a smell. Like I know exactly what that is. And so it is the Chicago love letter. I don't know if there's ever been a more Chicago show. This show to me is Cheers in Boston, but honestly, like done better because that was done on a soundstage. Like so many of these other shows, and I'm listening to the Michael Richards memoir, and he's talking about how everything in Seinfeld was on a soundstage in LA. And it's just like, you can kind of tell to a certain point, but yeah, I think that it's such a naturally Chicago show. I've always loved that about this.
I think too, like, I don't know anything about filmmaking, but I think it would be B-roll where, and it happens a lot in the second season too, where it's like, it's a lot of shots of like tortillas being made or like candies being made or like hot dogs. Mm-hmm. And it's this like the hum of the city is happening as, you know, all around them. And there's like, they're always on the train. I don't know. We've obviously spent a lot of time in Chicago and we love it. But if I lived there, I would get like 20 times more satisfaction over just like recognizing the little details of the city. And it is essentially Midwestern. Obviously watching TV is always so LA or New York, like very coastal. And so to have something be, you know,
in the Midwest.
I think that means a lot to all of us.
Well, guys, thank you so much. This is such a great jam. I no pun intended, jams, right? Wordplay. Yeah. But this was this such a great hang. And I love a show like this. And this is honestly one of my favorite things to do when it comes to a content podcast. But have something that inspires a lot of thoughts and discussion and to have them and to celebrate them. So I appreciate you coming back, Vic. We'll see you for Presumed Innocent. Right,
we're gonna figure out. Always such a great time.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about Jake Gyllenhaal with a shirt off. Paulina and Adam, welcome to your first episode. Thank you guys so much. That was incredible insight from your experience as well as just some awesome takes. Right.
Thank you so much for having us. Absolutely. We'll be back for season 4.
Let's do it again next season.
We'll see you guys at least next year for season 4 or for any other food related content, TV, film, or otherwise come out. And for everybody listening, as we're playing the outro music, yes, I did finish my giant glass of wine.
Yes!
Here we go, everybody.
It's
4:42 p.m. Here we go, everybody. I'll see you. But we'll see you guys on the other side. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.